Welcome to Learning English from the Voice of America. I'm Katie Weaver. Today on the program, we have stories from Ashley Thompson, Brian Lynn, and Marcia James. And I have a story about the world's richest people. As always, we will end the program with an American story. This week, we hear part three of Edgar Allan Poe's William Wilson. But now, here is Ashley Thompson.
An electoral committee will meet on Sunday to choose a new chief executive for Hong Kong. That person will serve for 5 years. Most of the committee's almost 1,200 members are loyal to the Chinese leadership in Beijing. They are expected to support Carrie Lam, China's choice for chief executive. Her opponent, John Tsang, is more popular with people in Hong Kong. However, some observers believe the committee is divided. Many people are wondering what effect the election results might have on calls for political reform. The British returned control of Hong Kong to China 20 years ago. Today, the former colony remains a mix of East and West. It has its own culture and traditions. Large buses travel through narrow streets. The smell of dried seafood fills the air in many places. And horse racing is popular, just as it was when Hong Kong was a British colony. But some things have changed. Instead of being able to directly elect Hong Kong's leader, city residents must accept the decision of the committee. China is increasing its control of the city. At the same time, residents seem increasingly disconnected with the government in Beijing. Young people are wondering about the delay of political reforms. Many people in Hong Kong say they want the rule of law, a strong economy, and the right to vote for the chief executive. They want someone who will protect the interests of the city of 7 million people. Many people believe Hong Kong's current chief, C.Y. Leung, failed to do so. They launched a series of demonstrations that lasted for months. The protests were called the Occupy Central Campaign, or Umbrella Movement. In late 2015, some booksellers disappeared. This increased concerns that China's one country, two systems for Hong Kong was becoming one country, one system. Pro-democracy activists say they are not afraid to continue their protests if Chinese officials do not listen to them. Yvonne Leung is a former president of the Hong Kong University Students' Union. She was a leader of students during the Occupy Central campaign.
The Chinese government is trying very hard to combat any democratization movement, but I believe it is very important for Hong Kong people to uphold the core value, because the more aggressive the Chinese government are, the more people will be affected.
Most observers believe Carrie Lam will get a majority of the votes on Sunday. Only about 25% of the Electoral Committee's members are supporters of John Tsang. Political observer Dixon Singh says the election is not likely to end political unrest in Hong Kong.
The division will continue, but then it's also a matter of making compromises.
China is South Korea's biggest trading partner, and many Chinese are big fans of Korean pop culture. But Korean businesses say they are suffering because of a dispute over a missile defense system located in South Korea. American forces have already begun deploying some parts of the anti-missile system known as THAAD. U.S. and South Korean officials say the system is needed as a defensive measure to counter the threat of missile attacks from North Korea. But China has repeatedly spoken out against THAAD, saying the U.S. could use the system's radar technology to monitor Chinese military activity. For months, Chinese state-run media have called for a boycott of South Korean products over the THAAD deployment. Many South Korean companies and media stars say they have lost business over the dispute. Among industries suffering economic losses is South Korean entertainment exported to China. Several K-pop music stars were forced to cancel planned concerts in China because of visa issues. Some popular South Korean television shows have also reportedly disappeared. Chinese and South Korean experts see the entertainment industry as intentionally targeted due to Beijing's opposition to the THAAD system. Adam Jordan is a correspondent for Reuters news agency who covers China. He says the popularity of K-pop music and South Korean shows makes them an easier target.
It's an obvious target for a crackdown on Seoul and on South Korea's economy because China is one of the biggest importers of South Korean cultural imports.
China has denied that economic restrictions have been placed on South Korean companies because of the anti-missile dispute. But there are other examples of businesses suffering due to an economic backlash over THAAD. One of them is international supermarket chain Lotte Group. The company agreed to sell land to South Korea's military so it could deploy THAAD to the area. A few days after the agreement was signed, Lotte suffered a cyber attack that took down its shopping websites for several hours. In addition, dozens of Lotte Mart stores were recently ordered shut for a month in China after officials conducted surprise inspections. The Chinese government-run newspaper Global Times recently wrote an opinion article in support of economic sanctions on Lotte and other South Korean companies. While the Lotte Group provided the land to U.S. military deployment at the expense of China's security interests, it should not be allowed to benefit from the Chinese market, the newspaper wrote. It added that a Chinese boycott would also greatly harm South Korea's tourism industry. According to the Associated Press, China told South Korean travel agencies to stop selling tour packages to South Korea. Instead, Chinese visitors should seek visas themselves. South Korean airlines also cut flights to and from China as demand dropped. Adam Jordan said such unofficial sanctions are a clear attempt by Beijing to keep up pressure on Seoul on the THAAD issue.
By targeting this area, it's sending a clear and very visible message to South Korea, you know, back off from the anti-missile system, or, you know, we're going to continue to spread this crackdown on your stars.
South Korea said it has brought the issue to the World Trade Organization for possible action against China's alleged retaliation against South Korean companies. Meanwhile, a new opinion survey shows growing anti-China sentiment in South Korea following the economic reaction to THAAD. Results of the survey were released by the Asan Institute for Policy Studies in Seoul. The survey saw China's favorability rating in South Korea fall to 3.21 on a scale of 1 to 10, with 10 being the highest. Interestingly, it was lower than that of Japan, which was 3.33, said Kim Ji-yoon, a research fellow and co-author of the study. In past surveys, Japan has consistently ranked lower than China due to continued anger in South Korea over atrocities committed during Japanese colonization of the Korean Peninsula. South Korean opposition to THAAD also dropped from 46% in November to 38% in March. Kim said the study found that even THAAD opponents now have a lower opinion of the Chinese.
Regardless of your attitude or opinion toward THAAD deployment in Korean Peninsula, China has lost a lot of popularity among the Korean public.
The United States, South Korea's closest military ally, received the highest favorability opinion at 5.71. Not surprisingly, North Korea finished last in the survey with a rating of 2.17. I'm Brian Lin.
Forbes magazine released its yearly list of the richest people in the world. There are more billionaires than ever before. A record 2,043 billionaires on Earth. Microsoft co-founder Bill Gates, once again, is number one. His fourth straight year at the top. The magazine reports his wealth to be a cool $86 billion. The estimate is up $11 billion from last year. Businessman Warren Buffett regained his number two position on the list this year with $75.6 billion. Another American, Jeff Bezos, is at third place, with the biggest jump in wealth. The creator of the online market Amazon is $27.5 billion richer this year. The entrepreneur has $72.8 billion, according to Forbes.
doctors at an American hospital have successfully operated on a baby born with four legs and two spines. The 10-month-old baby girl is known only as Dominique from Ivory Coast. She is reported to be recovering well. Doctors separated her from a parasitic twin in a complex operation on March 8th at Advocate Children's Hospital in Park Ridge, Illinois. Hospital officials say the operation lasted 6 hours. It involved five surgeons and many other healthcare workers. The bottom half of the not fully developed twin's body was sticking out from Dominique's neck and back. The twin was dependent on Dominique's body and could not survive independently. Dr. John Ruga is a child care specialist.
This is a situation where identical twins failed to separate, and the separation, they can be connected in a variety of different manners.
Dominique was born with two spinal columns. Without an operation, her life would likely not be a long one, with physical problems and pain, doctors said. They were concerned about the pressure put upon Dominique's back and organs. Doctors used imaging equipment to create a three-dimensional model of her two spines. A second bladder behind the extra legs had to be removed. The team of surgeons performed a test operation to prepare for the surgery. In the real operation, doctors disconnected nerves and blood passages to prevent feelings of numbness or even paralysis. Dominique was able to sit up the day after the surgery and was released from the hospital 5 days later. She is now recovering at the home of a foster family in Chicago. They will care for her until she is well enough to return home to her family in Africa. I'm Marcia James.
Now it's time for an American story. Today we hear part three of William Wilson by Edgar Allan Poe.
You remember that in the last part of my story, I told of my experiences in my first school. I spoke of my early meetings with a boy who looked and behaved as I did, whose name was even the same as mine, William Wilson. I told of the night when I went to Wilson's room with a plan to hurt him. What I saw that night so frightened me that I left the room and the school forever. As I stood looking down at his sleeping form and face, I might have been looking at myself in a looking-glass. It was not like this, surely not like this, that he appeared in the daytime. The same name, the same face, the same body, the same day of coming to school, and then his use of my way of walking, my manner of speaking. Was it in truth humanly possible that what I now saw was the result, and the result only, of his continued efforts to be like me? Afraid, I left the old school and never entered it again. After some months at home, doing nothing, I went to study at the famous school called Eton. I had partly forgotten my days at the other school, or at least my feelings about those days had changed. The truth, the terrible truth of what had happened there, was gone. Now I doubted what I remembered. Now I called the subject into my mind only to smile at the strength of the strange ideas and thoughts I had once had. My life at Eton did not change this view. The fool's life into which I carelessly threw myself washed away everything that was valuable in my past. I do not wish, however, to tell here the story of my wrongdoing, wrongdoing which went against every law of the school and escaped the watchful eyes of all the teachers. 3 years of this had passed, and I had grown much larger in body and smaller in soul. 3 years of wrongdoing had made me evil. One night I asked a group of friends who were as evil as I to come to a secret meeting in my room. We met at a late hour. There was strong drink, and there were games of cards, loud talking until the new day began appearing in the east. Warm with the wine and with the games of chance, I was raising my glass to drink in honor of some especially evil idea, when I heard the voice of a servant outside the room. He said that someone had asked to speak with me in another room. I was delighted. A few steps brought me into the hall of the building. In this room no light was hanging, but I could see the form of a young man about my own height, wearing clothes like those I myself was wearing. His face I could not see. When I had entered, he came quickly up to me, and taking me by the arm, he said softly in my ear, "William Wilson." There was something in the manner of the stranger and in the trembling of his uplifted finger which made my eyes open wide. But it was not this which had so strongly touched my mind and heart. It was the sound of those two simple, well-known words, William Wilson, which reached into my soul. Before I could think again and speak, he was gone. For some weeks I thought about this happening. Who and what was this Wilson? Where did he come from? And what were his purposes? I learned that for family reasons he had suddenly left the other school on the afternoon of the day I myself had left it. But in a short time I stopped thinking about the subject. I gave all my thoughts to plans for study at Oxford University. There I soon went. My father and mother sent me enough money to live like the sons of the richest families in England. Now my nature showed itself with double force. I threw aside all honor. Among those who spent too much money, I spent more, and I added new forms of wrongdoing to the older ones already well known at the university. And I fell still lower. Although it may not be easily believed, it is a fact that I forgot my position as a gentleman. I learned and used all the evil ways of those men who live by playing cards. Like such skilled gamblers, I played to make money. My friends trusted me, however. To them, I was the laughing but honorable William Wilson, who freely gave gifts to anyone and everyone who was young and who had some strange ideas, but who never did anything really bad. For 2 years I was successful in this way. Then a young man came to the university, a young man named Glendinning, who, people said, had quickly and easily become very rich. I soon found him of weak mind. This, of course, made it easy for me to get his money by playing cards. I played with him often. At first, with the gambler's usual skill, I let him take money from me. Then my plans were ready. I met him one night in the room of another friend, Mr. Preston. A group of 8 or 10 persons were there. By my careful planning, I made it seem that it was chance that started us playing cards. In fact, it was Glendinning himself who first spoke of a card game. We sat and played far into the night, and at last the others stopped playing. Glendinning and I played by ourselves while the others watched. The game was the one I liked best, a game called Ecarte. Glendinning played with a wild nervousness that I could not understand, though it was caused partly, I thought, by all the wine he had been drinking. In a very short time he had lost a great amount of money to me. Now he wanted to double the amount for which we played. This was as I had planned, but I made it seem that I did not want to agree. At last I said yes. In an hour he had lost 4 times as much money as before. For some reason his face had become white. I had thought him so rich that losing money would not trouble him, and I believed this whiteness, this paleness, was the result of drinking too much wine. Now, fearing what my friends might say about me, I was about to stop the game when his broken cry and the wild look in his eyes made me understand that he had lost everything he owned. Weak of mind and made weaker by wine, he should never have been allowed to play that night. But I had not stopped him. I had used his condition to destroy him. The room was very quiet. I could feel the icy coldness in my friends. What I would have done I cannot say, for at that moment the wide, heavy doors of the room were suddenly opened. Every light in the room went out. But I had seen that a man entered. He was about my own height, and he was wearing a very fine long coat. The darkness, however, was now complete, and we could only feel that he was standing among us. Then we heard his voice. In a soft, low, never-to-be-forgotten voice, which I felt deep in my bones, he said, "Gentlemen, I am here only to do my duty. You cannot know the true character of the man who has tonight taken a large amount of money from Mr. Glendinning. Please have him take off his coat, and then look in it very carefully." While he was speaking, there was not another sound in the room. And as he ended, he was gone.
And that's all the time we have for today's show. I'm Katie Weaver.